Okay, the meeting of the Finance Administration and Oversight Committee will come to order. First item is approval of the agenda. The general manager has asked that we add an item to the agenda, and this will be a discussion of the Inspector General report on federal grant line items and the sales office media reconciliation. So without objection, that will be a new item A under information items for discussion purposes, after which we'll do the continued review of the 2010 budget.
Is that going to be after all the rest of it?
No, it's going to be in the beginning.
Is it really an item, or does the general manager just want to make say something?
It's an interim.
He wants to say something.
He wants to talk about the issue.
Who does?
The general manager does. Okay. So without objection, I just want to add that item into the agenda. Are there any additional changes or corrections to the agenda? If not, without objection, the agenda is approved. We have no minutes, and so that leads us into this first information item. This really results from an article that was published, I guess, on Sunday that discussed a report by the Inspector General. I did want to note for the committee that our Subcommittee on Audits, Investigations, and Oversight did in fact review the Inspector General report actually some time ago. And the reaction, I believe, of that committee was that, first of all, relative to the federal grants, the issue was essentially a bookkeeping issue. Nobody violated any federal rules. Nobody violated any requirements by the federal government other than that they charged items to the wrong line items in the wrong grants, and that if they had charged them to different line items and different grants, they would have been fine, or if the grants had been appropriately amended, they'd been fine. So it was an internal control issue. And in the second one on the sales office's media reconciliations, that there were some fare cards that should have been destroyed and shredded. They were not shredded. This allowed people to recycle them. This was caught. It was fixed, and the reconciliation process was improved to make sure that that kind of thing would not happen again. In both cases, I think it was the conclusion of the investigations and oversight, audits, investigations, and oversight subcommittee, that everything was working exactly the way it was supposed to work. That is, we have an inspector general to find these kinds of issues. The whole purpose of having an inspector general is to identify things that are not exactly the way they should be. And in this case, what the inspector general discovered was a set of situations where in and of themselves, it wasn't a very large problem, but it showed that there was a possible problem if the basic procedures were not fixed. And the staff immediately agreed to fix those. So I think what we saw was the system working the way it should have worked. Mr. General Manager.
Well, actually, Mr. Chairman, you did a very good job of explaining what I was going to say. Specifically on the capital grants, let me do some numbers on it. Approximately 0.6% was the amount of errors that was demonstrated. That means 99.4% were done correctly. Does that mean it was perfect? No. We need to improve our processes to ensure that every capital item is under the right category. But moving forward concerning the stimulus program, because in the article there was some expression of concern about our abilities to spend the $200 million properly. Today we will be making a presentation on that plan and the specificity of what those items will be pending board approval. From the standpoint of transparency, we will have a special website that any resident or any citizen or board member or anyone can review the projects specifically, what's being spent, what the status is, all the way through the process until it is completed. In addition, we will do a quarterly report that will summarize all of the capital programs and what their statuses are, and make that report available. Not just available, we will be sending it out to the general public for their review and to keep them informed in what we're doing. We're very mindful here of our responsibilities to protect the taxpayers' dollars. and with the CFO, Phil Kissel, and her staff. They understand that responsibility. And again, I'd like to thank the Inspector General, as well as not just for these audits, but others that she's completed, and I'm sure additional audits in the future, because those audits in this process allow us to correct areas or to improve the performance of the agency. And that's my comments, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I want to put a fine point on this, because, you know, I've got to say that when I woke up on Sunday morning and I turned to the Metro section front page above the fold, I thought, oh, my God, what's happened to us now? You know, security problems, Inspector General, you know, major issues, questions being raised about, you know, we don't know where this will end, you know, and I thought, oh, my dear. And so I had to put the paper aside for a moment. And then I calmed down a little bit and I said, I'm going to read this very carefully. And I read it very carefully one time through. And I thought, where's the beef? You know what I'm saying, how you go through that? Where's the beef? And I said, I better read it again, because sometimes I miss things. You know what I'm saying? And so I read it again and I concluded there is no beef. There's nothing here but an inflammatory headline. Now, you tell us today that the Inspector General reported that we were 99.4% accurate.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes. That's looking at the...
Let me ask this question. How did you feel after you read this article with the headline that was attached to it and the opening paragraph?
I felt worse than what you did Sunday morning. I was outraged, yeah.
I mean, I hope that we're, you know, I think those of us who are in public life, and it's everybody at this table, you know, get accustomed to this, that, and the other thing. But, you know, I really hope that the media, you know, and this I refer to all the media, you know, will be careful about what they project, because this was another one of those stories where it looks like Metro is going to heck in a wheelbarrow. And yet nobody reads it as carefully as we do, you know, twice in one morning, I think. You know, people read the headline, they read the first couple of paragraphs, and then they make their conclusions. That's what happens. You know, something like 3% of the dwindling readership reaches the jump page, you know. So anyway, I just want to say that I hope we're taking steps to bring this to the attention of the Washington Post so that they can say, you know, there's something amiss here. Are you doing that? And if so, how?
I think we just brought it to the attention of the Washington Post.
Are they here? Oh, yes. Well, I'm sure we'll have a lengthy article on this tomorrow. Headline wrong, first few paragraphs misleading, you know, we're sorry, mea culpa, mea culpa. Well, we'll look forward to reading that.
Are we ready to move ahead with our regular business?
Yes, sir, we are.
Okay, let's proceed to our continued review of the 2010 budget. Ms. Kissel.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, you can go to the next page. Actually, this is the page that you all are familiar with by now, which actually shows the crosswalk of where we currently are in the FY 2010 budget, and we actually have the $29 million budget gap. In the last meeting, committee meeting that we had, each of the jurisdictions actually had provided analysis on an analysis on reviewing service reductions as well as other subsidy increases and other items to close this budget gap. We received all of those items, and if you go to the next page, I can talk about, generally speaking, what those resulted in. In each one of the jurisdiction cases, there was a combination of subsidy increases as well as some recommendations on service reductions. And the district submitted, Montgomery County, Prince George's County submitted headway and regional and non-regional bus reductions, Alexandria, Arlington, as you can see, the rest. I think the next page actually goes into the level of detail. And as you can see, based upon the $29 million gap and the subsequent changes that we had, or recommendations that we received from the jurisdictions. We have come to a result of an interesting outcome. As you can see on the bottom, where it says remaining subsidy gap, as a result of some of the changes in the regional and non-regional areas, some of the total gap subsidy in the district, as you can see, has resulted in a credit of a subsidy. The other jurisdictions, Montgomery County, Prince George's County, as you can see there, they have service reductions above, and their subsidy addition will be in the order of magnitude of $8.5 million. Arlington County, their subsidy reduction, and then City of Fairfax and Fairfax County. So this is the recommendations, and the detail, there's an accompanying detail that goes through those service recommendations and service reductions that are in the appendix. But this is actually the preliminary analysis that we've done based upon what we've received and what the outcome looks like in terms of closing that gap.
Are there any questions?
Any questions?
Mr. Chairman? Well, first, I just want to thank you all very much for, you know, maybe we're seeing the end of this process in sight, and I want to thank everyone who has contributed so much to this. It's had its frustrating moments, but I think we're getting there. I just have a more or less technical issue. This is one of those things where it's like a weed. You know, I cut it down and it grows back. I cut it down and it grows back. I cut it down and it grows back. I hope at this moment I can cut it down and it won't grow back, which is on page 26, when you're describing the District of Columbia. It's under the listing of line eliminations. The 98 and the N22 were eliminated and transferred to the DC circulator with no reference in FY09, with no reference of any kind to the FY10 budget needs. Mm-hmm. Do I need to repeat that? Because I've said this about 100 times, honestly. And so, you know, it ought not to be described as something that the District of Columbia is doing in order to fill its share of this $29 million remaining gap. Mm-hmm. In other words, we did this work is finished. It's finished in FY09. It has no reference to the FY10 situation. What this does, however, is that by eliminating these two routes, we have assumed, and you have advised that we should assume, mm-hmm. that would have a corresponding decrease in our FY10 budget, subsidy budget.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we are taking that corresponding a decrease and saying we won't take that decrease. We'll instead pay at the FY09 level or FY10, you know, again forwarding the funds associated with this to Metro. Mm-hmm. So I do not want, and I've had, if you feel a little frustration in my voice, it's only because this weed has been cut about six times. Mm-hmm. I do not want this listed as a service reduction for the district fund. I want this instead listed accurately as the District of Columbia providing more subsidy support, because that's what it is. Mm-hmm. You understand the point?
I definitely understand the point, and it was probably just a matter of timing because the board had not taken the action yet on the N22 and 98, but we will make the change.
But we have done it now.
Yes, that's correct.
They're both eliminated. This mm-hmm. is still FY09. In fact, if I may be so bold as to suggest, the District of Columbia, speaking of credit, I'd have a little FY09 subsidy credit because, you know, we're opening, you know, these two lines next week mm-hmm. at the expense of the District of Columbia 100% under the DC circular.
That's correct. There probably will be a 3-month.
Can I see this before it goes out? Because mm-hmm. I don't want the people in the District of Columbia thinking that we eliminated two lines in order to, you know, make up for our subsidy gap, because this is apples and donkey.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
May I see that, Mr.
Yes, you may.
General Manager, before
yes,
I go
sir,
ahead.
You will get to see that.
Now, one other point. On page 5, we have the description of the FY10 gap closing action. And we say highway widening of less than 5 minutes on a number of routes. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's less than 90 seconds, and in most cases, it's less than 60 seconds. In only one case is it 4 to 5 minutes, and that's where the bus size was increased, so there's likely to be no impact. Again, it's how people will see this. And so I would ask you to, instead of this 5 minute, that you accurately state what the District of Columbia is proposing. Would you mind doing that?
We can make that change, yes.
Right, because this shorthand is just going to lead to, you know, needless agitation, which if people understand actually what we're doing, they'll say, well, it's less than 90 seconds in most cases, 60 seconds in one case, which is the H6, and it's 4 to 5 minutes only where the bus size was increased, meaning there was no impact.
Mm-hmm. Question, Mr. Chairman.
So if I could just, I'm almost finished. So if you could we have the full description in the notice to the public of what we're doing?
Yes, the full description will be, and the appendix actually does that. I think the chart that you're referring to, we can make it clearer, yes.
Just make it clear. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Question, Mr. Graham.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Where was that you were looking at?
Well, it's a description of the FY 2010 gap closings on page 5 of 46.
My recollection, though, is that isn't there a table that actually...
Yes, there is.
Yes,
but I was concerned that this might be used.
No, I understand. I want to actually look at the specific table. What
yeah,
page is
in the back, there? Page 26.
Page 26.
And that's what we've... In the appendix, it is clear. It's just
there
not clear on this chart.
So if we look at the line that, for instance, the 4 or 5 minute one that Mr. Graham was just referring to, that is... Where is that?
Page 26?
Yeah, where is that on the page?
That's the,
I don't see this on page
27. Actually, I think page 11 is really what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
You have good staff, Mr. Graham. Page 11 is, I think, the one that shows you a little more detail on this. And I don't know if the description here is relevant, but I want to clarify. I assume the comments that Mr. Graham made would be applying to any of the routes around the region. And looking at this, the lower half of it, which says headway adjustments, isn't very specific except to say less than 90 second increase, except H6C note, which the note doesn't actually explain that. It simply explains the fact that there are new buses coming in and the adjustment's going to be made then. But does that mean the 90 second doesn't apply to the X2? Which, by the way, one of my favorite...
Listen, Jonathan, will you come over here?
Mm-hmm. Where does it say that? That's not the
specificity is in the description of the headways.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's the H6, yeah. Okay. So this is really small print. And
it is.
One time I could have read this easier, but time for bifocals. So I want to see if I understand this. So the H6 route is, it says 10 to 14 a.m. and p.m. Does that mean 10 to 14 minutes?
This is from the district, so I would refer to the district to answer that question.
Was 10 minutes now 14 minutes?
Yes.
Was 15 now 20? That's what it means.
That's how I interpret it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the one that says Root is now using larger bus, that's what Mr. Graham was referring to, and no longer needs to run as frequently. Now, if that's going, for instance, if you go from 15 minutes to 20 minutes, basically instead of running 4 buses an hour, you're running 3 buses an hour. But I guess the point being made in the note is that it's the same number of seats in an hour.
The capacity would be the same.
Right. Except that if I'm waiting for the bus, instead of getting 4 buses an hour, I get 3 buses an hour.
Yes.
And I'm waiting 20 minutes instead of 15 minutes, except that when it's not running... Oh, well, it could be running on time because it could be as much as 7 minutes late and it would be on time. So I could wait 27 minutes, which to a lot of people is half an hour, before getting a bus. Am I wrong?
It could occur, yes.
Yeah. Okay, I just want to make sure I understand. You know, it's one thing to say headway is adjusted by 60 seconds or something, but when you're actually reducing the number of buses on the route, I mean, that may be an economy you feel you have to make, and I can understand that. But we shouldn't have people thinking that that's not an impact to bus service.
Mm-hmm. Or it isn't.
As a way for bus services, no. It's a big deal whether you have 3 or 4 an hour or 4 an hour.
Mr. Graham.
Yeah, I'm advised that WMATA was planning on making these headway adjustments when the buses were the size of the buses were increased. But my comments were related to a different page, basically. Where everything was lumped together for 5 minutes or less. And I wanted to have the clarification.
They weren't all five-minute changes.
Right.
Right, exactly. That was the change I wanted to make. And you know, but I would agree with you, if I may, that, you know, if this is this chart or this table on page 11 going out?
It's out there now. Yes.
No, and the note when we send out the
notice. Oh, so the notification, are we going to have a lot more detail? I think the format will be different than this.
I think if we could put this, this is a general comment, which this specific inspires. Can we put this through a consumer-friendly filter so that somebody can look at this and make this readable and quickly understandable to the average person?
I think the docket that we're preparing for the public hearing will look mostly like page 26 of this presentation, and certainly we can make it more more informative or structure it however the committee wants.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
I just want to see it in plain English.
Yeah.
That you know that the average person can capture the meaning very quickly. Mm-hmm. And that would not be the case right now.
And I do think that page 26 is a little bit more abbreviated than the general manager indicated we were likely to do as a final. Mr. Solomon, did you have
a question? Yes, I do. I want to follow up on this point that Mr. Graham and Mr. Finn, I have a lot to say, but I want to follow up on this point about headway. I guess Maryland is proposing to lengthen the headway or widen the headway on a couple of routes in Prince George's County, 812 for instance. When you look at your page 26 of the general manager, well, let's go to the headway. I guess that's 27. A-12, Martin Luther King Highway. First of all, that route is in the poorest neighborhood in the county. Prince George's County behind the District of Columbia probably has some of the heaviest transit-dependent population. Poor people without cars, they need the transit and the buses to get around, to get to church, get to the markets, to the doctors for health care. And what Maryland is proposing here is elimination of some routes and widening of the headway. And I want to emphasize this widening of the headway. At least the District of Columbia came up with some time frame that how this headway is going to be widened and what the time frame is from what time, whether it's 60 seconds, 90 seconds, or 5 minutes. Here, can you tell me on A-12 what's the current headway and what it will be after this proposed widening? Because my understanding is, and I don't think the board members at this table really understand it, the headway on that route now is over 30 to 45 minutes. In the county, some headways are 60 minutes. I mean, it's pretty much not like Mr. Zimmerman is talking about from 5 to 10 to 15 minutes. We're already talking over 30, 45 minutes. So what's the current headway on A-12, and what will it be if you widen the headway?
I'm looking someone wants.
Yeah.
I
know who you're looking for.
That's right.
The reason I hesitate is I don't have the specific answers about what the headway is today. I don't know whether you have, Tom. I believe it's 30 minutes, and I believe it's going to 35. The headway widening is 5 minutes more than it is today because I stand here. I don't know what the exact headway is. I can go outside and find out, but I don't have it.
Please, because that's what the public needs to know. Now, Public Works and Transportation in the county is saying, on that A-12, the result of the widening of the headway is going to be a loss of 4 trips. And that is one of the heaviest routes in the county. A lot of people take that bus. And some of the poorest people in the county. And what we're talking about is the poor people usually are the first one or the last one to receive service. Now they're the first one to get the major cuts. This proposal is not talking about anywhere else in this system where these type of impacts are going to be on people without means, anywhere. Now, my colleagues can say, this is only Maryland issue, but it's the board's issues, the authority's issues. When it's written up in the paper, it's going to be, you guys on the board have to do that to those people. We have a stimulus money. But I'm not finished. I want the answer on the headway. Let's go down to now some elimination of groups. C-12 on your page 26. C-12 and C-14. Again, that's Hillcrest Heights, one of the poorest neighborhoods in Prince George's County, heavy transit dependent. And they're the first one talking about elimination of groups. And then on your 26, your attachment A, they say eliminate some alternative service. Well, our county agency is saying that a lot of that ridership, the only service from Branch and Old Branch through Applegate and Hillcrest Heights, there are no other service available. The bus is not available. So how are they going to get around if you eliminate that route? And it's just not talking about what Maryland is going to do and how it's going to impact Maryland. They're going to be calling up Mr. Graham and Mr. Zimmerman and talking about, you know,
I know what I'm going to say.
In the region when we are a regional system. I can go on and on and on, but Maryland, at least the county, does not support these, especially when we have an alternative. And I know they're saying don't put it off until next year, which you can, but I think that when you have this type of impact on the people who can least afford the service cuts, and that's what it is, elimination of groups, eliminating C-12 and C-14, eliminating W-15, and in fact, increasing the fares on W-19. We say we're not going to have a fare increase, but we're going from $3 to $3.10. How can you describe any other way but a fare increase? So in Prince George's County, it's getting dumped on this, lack of a better phrase. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to my colleague over there. Obviously, I have a difference of opinion, even within the same jurisdiction. Ironically, Mr. Graham was quoted today, WTOP is saying, in D.C., we have a situation where we have fairly painless service reductions, and we were hoping that in Prince George's County, we could have had fairly painless service reduction if we had been able to work with the county to come up with alternatives. I understand what Mr. Solomon is saying, that these particular cuts are not supported by Prince George's County, and I can understand that most people don't support service cuts at all. You know, it's not a fun thing. We don't want to do this, but we're in a situation where we have to do something. So we were looking to work with the county to come up with the cuts that would provide the least amount of impact to our customers and provide a situation, to quote Mr. Graham again, that is a little bit more fairly painless. So we hoped that we would be able to do that. We looked to work with the County Department of Public Works and Transportation, and if there is time, before we go out to public hearing, we continue to offer that. Also, Mr. Solomon has indicated that we have the use of stimulus money, as has our chairman, Mr. Graham, indicated that we have the use of stimulus money. But we also have a responsibility to act in a fiscally responsible way to not jeopardize our next year's budget and put us in a bigger hole for next year. And that was not the only alternative. That's the alternative Mr. Solomon suggested, but that's not the only alternative that we had. We also, or 2 weeks ago, we sat around this table and discussed a possible up to, not even 10 cent, but up to 10 cent fare increase across the board that would address, for rail, for bus, for parking, that would address the entire situation and reduce and eliminate that $29 million gap. It would end of story. And I would have preferred to do that. Not that that's ideal either, but it helps, and it doesn't hurt people as much as the service cuts. And at least, if we don't do that, at least I would like to take this to a public hearing and give our customers the opportunity to respond to options, not just the service cuts, but the service cuts. They might prefer an up to 10 cent increase across the board rather than lose those bus routes, rather than have an increased gap, which is significant in Prince George's County, and Mr. Solomon is correct on that. I'd rather provide them with the options so that we can hear from them. Ultimately, that they will, their input is critical. So that's all I have to say on that for the moment.
Mr. Chairman, I share the concerns expressed by our colleagues from Maryland.
And likewise, as I've said since day one, with the financial plight that we're all experiencing, the likelihood of us having to deal with additional subsidies to support the system, you know, from each jurisdiction is very remote. And while we all work in collaboration to try to solve the problem and narrow this gap, this particularly the $29 million gap, it is painful. And in my jurisdiction, it's a combination of not only service cuts to DASH, a local transit system, but to the reduction for regional service. And while we did what was requested of us, we're certainly not. It's not something that we like to see happen. I support the rationale to go to public hearing with a menu of items, and then let the ridership, the general public, respond in terms of whether they would like to pay additional fares or not. I've heard from several of our riders in my jurisdiction. I mean, a flurry of emails just in the past 48 hours, and folks are saying, "Please don't cut service, raise fares." And so I'm supportive of a fare increase up to whatever we want, but just to solely limit it to service cuts and reductions, I think it's not the right way to go. And nor am I supportive of stimulus fund utilizing stimulus funding, because that's a one-time solution, and we're not doing it in my jurisdiction, and I just think it's the appropriate way to use stimulus dollars. But certainly more reasonably, fare increases is something that I think ought to be on the table for discussion.
I just wanted to share some empathy with some of the concerns that Mr. Solomon has raised, because I think he talked about looking at his jurisdiction separately from the rest of the system. And indeed, that isn't what the system's about. It's not about Prince George's. It's not about Montgomery County. It's not about Fairfax. It really is a system. And so as we look at this, we try and balance what we think makes a quality system for folks, and particularly for those that are dependent upon it. And I think we are at the last discussion we had, and it's brought us to this, because if we are not capable of putting forth to the public the menu of options, we really are not asking them the question. We're making the decision. And you're making the decision within your own jurisdiction. That is, if they start in Prince George's County and end up in Fairfax, it's a different level of service as they travel from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. We really want it to be a much more unified system, that it recognizes the population we're serving, the demand, and the need. And we aren't going to be able to do that this time. So we've all gone back and decided how we feel and meet our obligation of a share, and that's where we've come down here in Fairfax County. We recognize what the impact is going to be, and what the dependence is of our customers traveling from and to Fairfax County on this system. And we've made the hard choice to say, well, if we're not going to be given broader options, we're going to take the entire and bite the bullet and provide the subsidy. But this brings us to a larger discussion that needs to be had at some other time. The message we got last meeting here was that we were not going to have the option to go out to public hearing on a broader set of menu, a broader menu of options. So this is where we are. And my course here has still been about trying to be a lot more inclusive of our public in the full discussion, and I'd like to get back to that as a further piece that we can do in the future, because I've accepted that this is where this budget is, and we've spent a lot of time on it, and we've used, I think, a lot of opportunity to share information in order to know where might the budget go in the future. But I have to accept that genuinely we've all gone back to our jurisdictions and we've found what we can best deal with. But it does impact all of us. It doesn't mean that someone traveling from Fairfax to Prince George's County won't experience some discomfort. But unfortunately, I don't have a direct control on that part.
I would like to avoid repeating the discussion that we had 2 weeks ago. And as I look around the committee at body language, I don't see that we're going to come out in a different place than we did 2 weeks ago. I do believe that Ms. Hutchins has raised an important issue, particularly relative to the 2011 budget, because we are going to face very much the same situation in 2011, and I hope that we'll be able to start the process somewhat earlier and perhaps consult the public on a broader range of options if we do start that process earlier. That having been said, unless there's a very strong need to pursue Mr. Ewell and Ms. Hudgens' suggestion right now, I think it's an item that we should let go, and we should focus on what everybody has in fact submitted. Mr. Graham.
I move the action item.
Okay, so we are now to action item A, and the specific thing that you are moving, Mr. Graham, is that the materials that were submitted by the various jurisdictions together as a package be sent to public hearing for service adjustments. Is that correct?
Correct.
Second.
There's a second.
With the understanding that I made on the 2DC item.
That there will be careful review of these things
that there will be changes made.
Yeah, and that there will also be careful review to make them customer friendly.
Right.
Mr. Zimmerman and Mr. McKay. Mr. Zimmerman first.
Well, first, I don't understand. We were on item 2A, and we're now on a motion on item 3A, I take
correct.
It. So we're not doing a presentation on 3A.
There were two more pages on 2A, and 3A, I believe, had no presentation. Is that right?
No, that's correct.
Okay, so if you wish, we can see the last two pages of 2A before we
I just want to make sure I understand what we're doing. So we're jumping ahead to 3A, and we have a motion before us now, which is to approve the authorization for public hearing.
That is what Mr. Graham did. He moved us forward to item 3A.
Mr. Chairman, on the question of how this is presented, which was a great concern of Mr. Graham, I would say that I think that we didn't really hear how that would be handled, although we heard that something like the page 26 list would be used, which I'm not sure addresses Mr. Graham's concerns, although it may be better. I was raising the question whether page 26 in fact addresses your concerns, which I'm not sure is what staff heard. I think staff said, yes, sir, we'll be sending out page 26.
No, so, I don't think so.
No. We'll make the adjustments.
Say that they were going to give more detail.
So if there's going to be something different than what we see here, then other members would also want to see what it is. And so I look forward to being distributed to all the board members for their comments. Mm-hmm. I would say that, while I think this particular page is more helpful than some others, the kind of questions that Mr. Graham raised are not necessarily fully addressed here, and I'm not sure there's a neat and easy way to do it. But I would suggest that in materials that are distributed, you might want to look whether there is a way to organize. Whether there is a way to organize it that classifies the actions, because there are some differences. As Mr. Graham pointed out, in a couple of cases, in several cases, there are routes that would be abandoned by Metro but would be taken over by a local service. From the standpoint of the customer, there might be no reduction in service whatsoever. And there are a few examples of that that he was referring to in the district where the circulator is taking over the route and assuming it is running on the same.
That's all. There's going to be no mention of those routes.
Well,
on
the ones you are concerned about aren't, but there are in fact things in here that are the exact same situation in other jurisdictions. And there should be some way to show that so that when people see that such and such route is going to be eliminated, they understand that in that case, it will be taken over by another service which will be providing it at exactly the same frequency of the bus they now enjoy. That's a different situation than saying the bus will be simply eliminated, as I gather is the case on some of the things that is listed in some jurisdictions, or saying we are changing headways. And saying we're changing headways, as I tried to suggest earlier, varies a whole lot depending on what the level of service is that we're talking about. So I think you need to find a way to express that as well. Going from four buses an hour to three buses an hour is a significant change. A 60-second headway adjustment on a frequent bus, maybe not. Although I would say that on the X2, when I've ridden it, it's always completely full and crowded and people standing on it. So my guess is that when you change the headway, you're going to see an impact on the service. And I would be interested, assuming we enact these things after all this, in knowing what follow-up we're going to do to see how we're affecting performance. But changing the headway on a bus, as Mr. Solomon was talking about, that runs very infrequently now, that's a different matter. So somehow, we need a way to group these that are, as Mr. Graham said, in plain English, something anybody can understand, but that really distinguishes between several different types of service changes that are proposed, some of which are minor reductions, but reductions nonetheless, some of which are major reductions, and some of which aren't reductions at all. Somehow, we have to find a way to make that easy for people to comprehend when they look at this and ask what is proposed to be done to their bus system. And following Ms. Hudgens' comments, I would note that although we're all particularly focused on those in our jurisdiction, it is a regional system. That is the point of having Metrobus. And many of us, although I mostly ride the buses in my jurisdiction, I do have occasion to ride, such as the X2 in the district, and others, and we need to care about what's happening in buses, even in places like Prince George's County, which some of us may not visit frequently, but are part of the region, and there are customers too. And it is correct that we will all hear about this, and it will be all our fault, whatever we are doing. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. McKay.
I don't want to return us from the system discussion back down to the jurisdictional one, because I completely concur with your comments and Kathy's, but I just want to be clear. For jurisdictions that are not proposing service cuts, there's nothing to have a public hearing on in those jurisdictions, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so I mean, you know, my concern is, after a lot of conversations in our jurisdiction in Fairfax, you know, we are agreeing to pay the additional amount primarily because we don't think it's fair to balance the deficit amount entirely on the back of bus service. So just to be clear, I mean, it is unfortunate. I don't want to bring up a conversation 2 weeks ago, but I don't want it to be misconstrued that we don't think fare increases or reductions to the rail system should not be considered. We're not considering those because we don't have the votes to do that. But our discomfort was, we're not going to cut exclusively bus service to fill our entire deficit amount. That's why we're paying it. And I just want to make sure, you know, that is clear, particularly since we're not going to have an opportunity to hear from our customers on some of the other reductions or proposals to fill the gap. And I just want to make that crystal clear from our standpoint of our jurisdiction.
Clarification.
Are you completed, Mr. McKay?
Yes, thank you.
I just want to understand Mr. McKay's point.
Mr. Zimmerman?
Were you saying we wouldn't need to have, when you said we wouldn't need to have a hearing where we weren't doing reductions, is there any place there are not reductions proposed?
Yes.
That's true.
That is true.
You're doing
Fairfax? That's right.
Then I guess I misread your documents. You're not proposing any.
We're not proposing any cuts in Fairfax.
Are there any other comments?
Yeah. I just want to make sure I heard that correctly, and it's because you felt it was unfair to have put this entirely on the backs of the riders.
Bus riders.
And I just have to say, I said we have a motion and a second on the table, and I have, under discussion, I just have to add that I think that's the tragic part of this. I really do, that we do not have that option to put other things on the table for our riders. You know, this, as we all talked about, this is a regional system. As Mr. Solomon indicated, it may, for reasons particular to Prince George's County, affect some of us, some of our buses and ridership, even harder because of the large headways that already exist there. And that is, he's absolutely right on that. That is tragic. I wish we had other options to put on the table. I wish we could put that up to 10-cent fare increase.
Mr. Graham.
Well, since everybody has kind of piled on this issue, I wasn't going to say anything, but speaking for the District of Columbia, we're unalterably opposed to a fare increase this year. We have for FY10, we have just had a fare increase. We've actually had 18 months of a fare increase. And the message that I am receiving from the people I represent is no fare increase for Metro WMATA. Now, maybe I'm not hearing from everybody else, but I'll make this very brief because I don't want to go on and on. We can replay the tape from 2 weeks ago, but let's be clear that we will not support a fare increase for FY10. We're not saying anything beyond that. We don't know. But for FY10, we would like to go out with two options: the use of the federal stimulus money to the tune of $29 million, and the proposals which the jurisdictions have returned to us with today. And that's our point of view.
Mr. Chairman.
If I may comment first of all, again, I do not want to have us repeat the discussion that we had 2 weeks ago, if possible. The motion, as I interpreted, does not include any discussion of stimulus money. It's purely to deal with the service adjustments which have been proposed by the various jurisdictions.
Oh, point of order. We're not putting out two options?
That wasn't your motion.
Well, no, I thought all of the discussion 2 weeks ago was that we were going to have two options on the table.
Oh.
So,
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Zimmerman.
Three things. First, in my jurisdiction, in Virginia, we're going to have hearings. There are some bus changes that require hearing. I could point out that in Arlington, the only changes are those that I described as planned takeovers that we had by ART of two local routes, which is part of how we're meeting this, but we were going to do anyway and won't affect bus service to people in my county. The rest of it is through what we're budgeting for transit. We'll be paying the subsidy. Alexandria has a much more difficult budget situation. I was asked this, Ms. Benjamin, the chairman asked this a month or so ago, and I was the first one to say, we can make this work. I don't need any big hit to service or a fare increase to deal with, if I looked at it narrowly, my problem in my jurisdiction. I also don't like the idea of a fare increase this year, and you know, as members know, worked pretty hard to get an agreement on it. Biennial approach to fares. Nonetheless, I will say that were the board to be entertaining a motion on this, I would have supported, as I said the last meeting, going to the public with an option of a small increase, and as Ms. Hewlett correctly observed, we could eliminate the need for any of these service cuts at all with a nickel or at most a dime, to at least give the public the opportunity to tell us, in fact, how they felt, not about an abstract fare increase, which of course everyone's against, like an abstract price increase or an increase in taxes, but given the choice between a cut in service that they're facing or a small increase in fare, I don't know what they'd say, but I've had a lot of people say to me, I'd much rather pay an extra nickel or dime than have you cut the service. But that we will not have the option to, and I thank Mr. Grant for making that clear, that the district is vetoing any opportunity for the public to comment on that.
I object to that. I sincerely object to that characterization.
Do I have the
you don't
Graham,
need to go
Mr.
into
Graham,
it. Come on, guys.
Mr. Graham? Mr. Zimmerman has the floor.
Unless I misunderstood, and I'm sure Mr. Graham can clarify that, I understood him both at the last meeting and at this meeting to make clear that the district was unalterably opposed and would not support, therefore would veto, any opportunity to go to hearing with any proposal for any kind of fare increase whatsoever. Again, if I have that mistaken, I'm sure he will clarify that.
You are mistaken.
In 2000.
If there is a possibility of doing such a thing, then we've heard from several jurisdictions that's what they'd like to do. And although I wouldn't need it for my jurisdiction and generally don't like the idea of a fare increase this year, I would entertain that, understanding the problems that the jurisdictions around the region are facing. Last point, when we look at the options, whether we explicitly say stimulus dollars or not, that option is there because it's not really stimulus dollars, and that's what we have to understand, and if we're going to hearing, we need to make that clear to people. There is not an option to use stimulus dollars. There is an option to use capital money. It would be there whether we had any stimulus dollars or not. What we're talking about is whether we reduce our capital budget further and use that to plug this year's budget gap. And the problem, as Mr. Benjamin has pointed out a number of times, is when we get to the end of the year and we get onto next year's budget, we have that hole to fill plus the hole we're going to have because this year's a lousy year economically too. And that's the real problem. We could tell people, oh, there's not going to be any service cuts because we're taking out of the stimulus money. But what we're really doing is undermining the budget for maintenance of the system that right now is too low and thereby adversely affecting the service they experience. I think our customers are pretty smart, and I think they get that. I think they know we don't spend enough to maintain the system now. And I'm not so sure that they would jump at saying, yeah, you should cut that rather than pay, say, an extra nickel to get on a bus or a train. I could be wrong. Again, that's why I would have gone to hearing with all of this in front of them and then done the budget afterwards. But that's not the way we're doing things. So unless I hear something different and someone wants to support Ms. Hewlett's motion or Mr. Yule's motion, then I assume we're going out with this. And I regret that those are the choices that we're left with, which are really not much choice at all.
Let me comment again that I would like to avoid having the same discussion that we had 2 weeks ago. There were many of us who had many thoughts which we expressed on the use of capital funds for operating purposes. There were many of us that had very strong thoughts about the possibility of letting the public listen to the issue of a fare increase. I think we very much decided at that time that both of those issues had insufficient support on the board to make it the public hearing. That focuses us now on the issue of the service changes and subsidy increases that each of the jurisdictions has submitted. That is the motion on the floor by Mr. Graham, seconded by Mr. Giancola. Are we ready to vote on that motion?
Just one last Graham. Little baby point. Correcting what I previously said, I now understand that the stimulus is always an option. We don't need to put that on. I just stand corrected.
Okay, so we do have a motion on the floor. Are we ready to vote on that?
Substitute motion.
Mr. Yule.
I'd like to move that we go to public hearing with two options. One, to the the subsidy adjustments that that have been prepared, and an option for a fare increase up to 5 cents.
You want to add the option of 5 cent fare increase?
Yes.
Is there a second? There is a second. Any discussion? Have we already had that discussion? All in favor of the substitute motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Guys, how many do we have? One, two, three, four. Yes.
One more hands.
Call for hands. One, two, three, four, five, six. Ayes. Opposed? One, two, three opposed. That motion carries. I would like to have a backup motion in case this one does not make it through the board. So if we could go back to the prime motion, would you move that again, Mr. Graham, since the substitute motion
I'm so moved.
And would you?
Second.
Okay. So we will have two options when we get to the board meeting and won't have to go back to committee. On the original motion, so that we have that one, it is purely on the service adjustments that have been submitted, which then would be supplemented by subsidy changes that various jurisdictions have provided. All those in favor of that motion, raise your hand
as a backup.
As a backup. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay. We then have two motions that we will be taking to the board meeting. I saw everybody except Mr. Solomon had raised their hand. Is that right? Okay. That, I think, completes action item A. Do you want to move on to action item B?
Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry. Mr. Graham.
If I may, on action item A, we have, I have, a number of questions about the stimulus proposal. And
is this item B?
That's item B.
Item B. Can we let them put it in front of us?
Oh, well,
ask the questions.
Well, I just want to say we're running into the board time.
I understand.
I just wanted to say if it were possible, if we could put this off.
I don't believe there's
any urgency to do this.
This is extremely urgent. This has got to be done. Ms. Kissel, if you would move. Quickly yes. through this one.
Yes, quickly.
We are cutting into the board time.
The purpose of the presentation before you is to amend the capital budget for funds that are received under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act and to approve the plan of contracts that are associated with those projects. A little bit of background, and we can go through this very quickly. January 8th, the board endorsed the potential projects to be funded by the RA. February 12th, the board received the update by the U.S. House and Senate and in the review of the Metro Prioritization Project that we presented on potential projects. February 17th, the stimulus bill was signed by the President. The 18th, we went to the TPRB and approved, did TIP amendments to approve a $230 million program. March 6th, the FTA regional apportionments were released. And on April 15th, it's anticipated that the TPB meeting will be used to amend the TIP to include the list of projects that we're presenting to you today and the budget as well. If you go to the next page. So the ARRA funds to Metro will be administered through the FTA, consistent with the formula grants that we currently receive. And the total formula funding to Metro is $202 million. As you know, there is no local match required for that. We are anticipated that our application is ready to go, and we will look to apply for the grant funds in early April, April 7th. We're positioned to do that. We're also positioned to do a grant award for projects May, June, and some as late as July. And actually, the process that you see before you here, we have actually completed. Split letters have been assigned and allocated, the portion that's allocated to other transit designated entities, MTA, PRTC, and VRE, and all these other details actually have been completed by Metro. In terms of compliance, as the general manager has already stated, we actually are going to be using our internal process that we currently have for tracking federal funds, and it's a very we have internal controls and processes set up for that. This will follow that process. We will have, in addition, will to be clear, much clearer transparency, putting these projects on the website. And again, we will use our existing processes to report on these funds, quarterly reporting to the FTA and other things. We've actually are using this process for the capital grants to enhance the capital program, our base capital program. So we're using this to understand how to be more transparent and to track our process from what we call rec to check, actually, for when we apply for grants, when we actually expend the funds, and then we actually make payments to vendors. The general manager can take you through a list of the projects that we actually have provided as an appendix to give you a sense for that.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Well, actually, we already approved the previously the list of 232, so now you're knocking $30 million out of it. So I think the most helpful thing, Mr. Chairman, would be to know what you knock out. What's the consequence of that change of the $30 million that we're knocking out?
The biggest change, it's in two areas. It was the rail inspection facility. We made changes, and also we took out the energy efficiency lighting at our subway stations because we believe there's other grants we can seek those funds from.
The first thing you said, the
rail vehicle inspection facility.
And that would have been something we'd be doing out at Carmen Turner, where was that going?
No, that would be, where would it be?
It would be at Greenbelt facility.
Greenbelt?
Yes.
And what's the reason for doing that?
For doing the facility itself?
Yeah. Why do we need that?
Because that facility will allow us to accept and inspect new vehicles, rehab vehicles, at a very expedited process. If we do not have it, our schedule for replacement of vehicles, the Dulles vehicles, all will be impacted.
And this includes the test track?
Yes.
Which is something that members who have been here a while can remember presentations on years ago, particularly when we had new rail vehicles coming in. And we had delays, both particularly with the 5,000 series, yeah, 5,000 series, but also some of the 6. Basically, they have to, a lot of that has to happen before it comes here. If you had this facility, you'd be able to do that work more on site, and you would speed the process of bringing the vehicles in onto the system.
Yes.
So not doing this means basically ultimately an impact on rail service at some point when new rail vehicles come.
If we do not get the facility, yes.
Okay. So that, once again, will get put off. Now, the other thing you said, you think you got other funds to do. That sounds easy, but if you had other funds to do, you'd be doing that anyway, and you'd be doing something else on the list of $500 million
yes.
projects that you showed us a few months ago. So the real question is, what are we not getting that we would have been getting if we had $30 million more? and it's not the thing you're going to do anyway with some other grant money.
It is the rail inspection facility.
That's $30 million?
It was higher than $30 million. We moved some of the dollars around, reduced certain areas, but that is the major project.
Okay, and the bus vehicle number, is this what we saw earlier, or did you reduce that from?
We did change the number on the oldest buses. It was increased by $3 million. Actually, we did reduce it, but then as we went back through and looked at, when we took out any discussions of preventative maintenance, we moved the monies back around, and we increased the bus from $24 million to $27 million.
Which is roughly, how many buses are we talking about getting?
45 to 48 vehicles.
Okay, 45 to 48 additional new vehicles, which will take approximately how long to come in?
It would take them, given that we already have a contract, at least a year to 18 months.
And this, all this funding that we're talking, if we approve this and we go forward with it, it goes into the capital budget in this fiscal year, or is it over the two?
It would be amended for this fiscal year. The budget would be amended for this fiscal year. The implementation will be over multi-year. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I need to say this again. I think I said it 2 weeks ago that the ARRA is new money. It's not existing money, and it's, we're adding it to our existing capital program. So to keep saying we're having to cut projects, to me, is a little misnomer. It's like a glass is half full rather than half empty kind of concept. But that being said, the issue I have is on number three, ST05. And I'm kind of curious, there are deadlines in the ARRA with
yes.
regard to meeting awards or obligation, actually, what they say. And is that going to meet that criterion, the 9:30 issue date?
Yes. It's our intent, wherever we build a bus facility, when we can build a bus facility, and hopefully under this, we will do a from A to Z type of contract with a firm that will do the environmental impact review, do this, some portion of the design and the construction of the facility. So we can issue a comprehensive contract to commit the funds.
Is this going to be like a design-build contract?
Yes.
And is $30 million enough?
No, sir. It's in addition to the $60 million.
All right. So it
will
be a joint constructed project.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Yule.
Yes. On page 42, at the top where you have the bus garage facility repairs, you have the Wall Street bus garage for $1,140,000.
Right.
Do those repairs, considering that we're moving and will be moving to dispose of that facility and hopefully sooner than later, is that a wise investment?
Well, here's... It is a wise investment at this time, unless we know in a very short period of time that we will be moving out of that facility. And let me give an example. The Weston facility, we've delayed any improvements for over 10 years because we kept saying we're going to move, and we haven't moved. And so at some point, we have to do some repairs to the facilities. And if we find during the process that there is a much higher probability that we would move, then we can come back and reprogram the dollars.
Just raising it FYI.
Yes.
Any other comments or questions? This is, I believe, the first time we've seen this resolution. And I just wanted to clarify, the first resolve essentially amends the budget for the sheet that's attached, which is a less detailed version of this one that we've been looking at. Is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the remainder of the resolves, well, the next one says you can go ahead and spend it. The remainder essentially allow you to use the $250 million credit line that we authorized for these projects. Is that right?
We're making that modification and recommendation, not that we expect to use that, but because the there may be a month period where actually the FTA actually hasn't submitted or does not have those funds readily available, and that's why we wanted to actually have this ability to use any line of credit that we currently have to fund those gaps.
I just wanted to be clear that that's what all the rest of those resolves are. They look like that's what they are, but it wasn't clear to me. So that's the use of the $250 million that we've already authorized?
That's correct.
Okay. So nothing new there. Do we have a motion to approve the resolution?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
Okay. Hutchins second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? No. That brings us to the end of our agenda. This meeting is adjourned.